Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to begin by looking at simple things we can do to help lower our cholesterol and our bad blood levels of fats, which is a major killer. And then for those of you who've been using the hormone in birth control, there's some really serious side effects, and I'll explain that from Arizona State University research. Stress is linked to a higher mortality risk among men. And what does that mean? What can happen? I'll explain that from the Journal of Aging Research. And bran can slash hypertension risk. Well, that's easy, inexpensive, considering how many people have high blood pressure. Stable post-hypertension, you're dealing with over 50 million Americans, people suffering from stroke, millions. So we need to deal with that and a lot more on health and healing. We're going then to look at the sea level rising could nearly double over the earlier estimates. Now, I said years ago, and been saying since, that we're in chaos theory, meaning there is no accurate mathematical model that could predict when something's going to happen, nor how severe it would be when it does happen. So they finally come up with a new model through the University of Massachusetts Amherst, as well as Pennsylvania State University, and they're saying, quote, a new study from climate scientists Robert DeCanto and David Pollard suggests that the most recent estimates by the government Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for future sea level rise could be too low by almost a factor of 200%. This was published in Nature magazine. What does that mean? I'll explain. I recently heard a series of comments by a person on Fox Network who said that what we need is to promote the idea of the entrepreneur, let the market dictate. That's how we became a great country. That's how we are a great country. And I was hoping there would be something else said. There wasn't. So I'm going to supply the other side, part of the other side, of how we became a great country. It was Hell for Children. It's from Dissolving Illusions, Disease Vaccines, and History You Don't Know. And this will show you who really caused America to become great. It wasn't the Carnegies, the Mellons, the Hills, the Goulds, the Fricks. No. Not J.P. Morgan. No. It was your children. I'll explain that. I think you'll appreciate the message. Also, time permitting, the truth about American educational system. Now, this guy has the guts to tell the truth about American educational system and the dumbing down of the American population. What will you think? And also, we rarely hear from a journalist, a highly respected journalist who comes forward and tells the truth. This guy, this very famous German journalist, told the truth. Wow. Wait till you hear what he has to say. And I'll be explaining a recent lawsuit today and what is the status of that and why it's important for these listeners to understand. Let's begin. First up, flax seeds, something very simple, inexpensive, natural. It's good to eat flaxseed, but it's better to have the flaxseed meal because then you're going to get a much higher level of absorption and digestion. And flaxseed goes back a long time. It's been around for a long time. And now we're finding out what all it does. And according to some of the latest research from Iowa State University's Nutrition and Wellness Research Center, it was found that men's cholesterol levels can fall much faster with a consumption of 150 milligrams of flaxseed. That's not a lot. No, that's, if you're talking about 150 milligrams, well, maybe a teaspoon a day, and that is good. So better cholesterol, getting down the bad cholesterol, the LDL, you can do it with flaxseed. You can do it with other things, but that's just flaxseed by itself. This is from Arizona State University. It says, quote, "The birth control shot Depo Provera offers a convenient alternative for women who don't want to remember to take a daily pill. Ironically, research from Arizona State University has shown the shot actually may impair a person's memory." It connects the MPA, the actual active ingredients, the hormone in Depo Provera, and many widely used menopausal hormone therapies to impaired memory. And this was published in Psychopharmacology. So there's a lot of healthier, non-invasive ways of controlling pregnancy. The hormone birth control has serious side effects, breast cancer, stroke, fibrous tissue, uterine fibroids, and now add memory loss. Stress linked to higher death rates among men. Quote, "Men who consistently experience more than two stressful life events each year," we're not talking about daily, weekly, just two a year, "over an extended period of time have a 50% higher death rate than their less stressed peers." Wow. That's important. So just understand that if we're all facing stress every day, but the key is how do you transcend the stressful events and become empowered by them, where you're actually stronger in character, stronger in determination because of stress, rather than being a sponge to absorb it, and your cortisol level goes through the roof, and your epinephrine level and adrenaline levels all through the roof, and then you're exhausted, and then greater likelihood of heart attack or stroke. So one more reason why: don't personalize everything. Don't get angry with everything. Don't live with rage. Don't be a control freak. Listen before you think you have to correct people. Go to neutral at some point in life and see what it's like. See if you can learn from the other. Simple things can allow you to live a longer life. And Bran, according to this Harvard study where they studied 30,000 doctors over a period of time, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, quote, "These findings have implications for future dietary guidelines and prevention of hypertension." Hypertension, by the way, costs us over $200 billion a year. They studied 31,681 doctors for 18 years, and they said that those who had the highest bran, which is fiber, had the lowest incidence of hypertension. Quote, "In summary, we found an independent inverse association between intake of whole grains and incidence of hypertension in men. Bran may play an important role in this association." Yes, it does. But there's two types of bran. There's the processed bran, and then there's the whole grain bran. Better to get millet and teff and quinoa and brown rice and beans, walnuts and almonds. That's your best bran. That's your best fiber. And that makes a big difference. For those of you who thought, well, drinking's not so bad. I mean, what's the big deal? If you get a little too much and you get a little woozy, lightheaded, let someone else drive, get you home, and the next day you'll be all right. No, you won't. You've caused some damage. You won't feel it and you won't see it. They took a look at 11,000 men, and they found that this was University of California at San Francisco. This was published in the journal Cancer. And they found that men who drank are raising the risk of developing prostate cancer. And the more you drink, the more you raise your risk. The trouble is, it's not about just drinking. It's what kind of alcohol you're drinking. And today, they're not talking about men having a glass of red wine. or a bottle of beer that has low alcohol, 2% alcohol. They're talking about today on the party scene, it's the vodka. Vodka and gin are the two big ones, and then scotch. Now, all of it tastes like turpentine, and all of it has the aftertaste of paint thinner in your mouth, and all of it's unpleasant. So you have to ask yourself, why will people drink this? Well, because of the effect, and because it's supposed to be a part of the ritual of a social environment. It's all foolish. And now, men, just understand something. When you're in your teens and 20s, you're in college, after college, hanging out, drinking, not to get drunk, just social drinking. Later in life, you're going to wake up and you're going to have problems with the prostate. I've said this a lot of times, but I thought it would be good to show this from another perspective. This is a report, The Inflammatory Factor Underlying Most Cancers by David Hoffnug, quote, implicated in the onset of 95% of all cancers is a common but under-recognized molecule most people have never heard of, nuclear factor kappa B, or NFKB. Emerging research is validating the danger it poses to maturing individuals. For example, a landmark study published last year confirmed for the first time that this chemical, this nuclear factor kappa B in our blood, plays a central role in the onset of malignant breast cancer. The team of researchers found that breast cancer cells require a specific inflammatory cascade in order to proliferate and metastasize. And as one of the proteins that activates genes involved in inflammation, NFKB is the master regulator of this pathogenic cancer-causing process. So that's the bad news. And where do you get these? Well, you get them from fried foods, alcohol, and sugar. So what can we do about it? Well, the very things that people have been doing for a long time, including the healthy people. First and foremost, there are known anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer properties in numerous fruits and vegetables and spices, and it starts with the antioxidants. Oxidative damage to your DNA and your proteins and other vital structures is a major factor in the initiation and promotion and spread of cancers. That makes antioxidants important agents to fight to prevent cancer. But many antioxidants can also be an effect when you're taking alcohol. They're destroyed. So what do we do? Well, if you have cancer, you should be looking at your intravenous vitamins, because then you're getting heavy doses of antioxidants like vitamin C into the body. And I have found that is to being a very important part of stage 2, protocol 2 of cancer. Protocol 1 is purely immune enhancement, meaning building up the body's natural immune system to fight the cancer. And you do that through detoxification and rejuvenation. And then stage 2 is in anti-cancer. Now that your body's stronger, your immune system's stronger, now loaded up with what it can need in order to fight the cancer directly. A large number of antioxidants are able to help, including glutathione, alpha-lipoic acid, the flavonoids. There's your berries. There's your grapes. There's your onions and garlic. The polyphenols. Selenium, zinc, lithium, vitamin C is the top of the list, vitamin D, very important. And these are known to make a difference. For example, milk thistle extracts enhance prostate cancer cell death through premature death of the cancer cells by reducing levels of NFKB in the cell nucleus. Tomatoes, tomato juice, it has carotenoid pigments like lycopene that prevent NFKB activation in prostate cancer by a different mechanism. And a form of vitamin E called gamma-tocotrienol downregulates NFKB in pancreatic cancer cells. And so we have all of these different diterpenes that suppress NFKB. and a host of antioxidants like black pepper, red pepper. Yeah, they both do this. So that's what we've got to do. Curcumin would be at the top of my list. Curcumin is an extraordinary molecule extracted from the spice we know as turmeric. It's among the most potent natural inhibitors of NFKB, and as such, it is the single most powerful anti-cancer nutrient you can take in your body. And curcumin is beneficial at all three major stages of carcinogenesis, the initiation, the progression, and the promotion. And most of the benefit has been linked to the inhibition of NFKB and subsequent inhibition of pro-inflammatory signaling. And NFKB initiation is also credited with curcumin's ability to inhibit cancer cell proliferation and invasion and new blood vessel formation and metastasis. And curcumin's showing promise in treating or preventing some of the most common and most dangerous malignancies, lymphocytic leukemia, lymphomas, pancreatic cancers, cancer of the bladder, colon, bile ducts. Curcumin can help to suppress the cancer-provoking inflammation, generally in almost all people who are overweight, and so you can get the genes to respond properly instead of improperly. Then right behind curcumin is garlic. Garlic, like turmeric, has a lengthy history of use in traditional medical systems, and when garlic extracts are allowed to be metabolized, they stabilize and retain strong antioxidant powers that indirectly downregulate NFKB. And why? Because garlic has a diol sulfide, and this directly inhibits NFKB. And then you have ginger. Ginger is a spice from Southern Asia. It's terrific on many levels. Gingerol, that's G-I-N-G-E-R-O-L, is the chief of these. It's a phenolic compound with antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and anti-tumor properties. And gingerol, not ginger ale, gingerol, suppresses inflammation by blocking the movement of NFKB into the nucleus, with the resulting downregulation of such inflammatory cytokines as tumor necrosis factor alpha, as well as the nitric oxide synthesis. And another major ginger compound, zurumboni, suppresses the activation induced by a host of common carcinogens. So ginger is just terrific against ovarian cancer, cancer of the breast, the liver, the colon, the lung, and gastric cancers. All good. And then green tea. Green tea extracts have widely been known to benefit in the preventing of many common chronic diseases. And their chief constituents, the catechin family of polyphenols, are powerful antioxidants that are given credit for most of the tea's beneficial effects. And the catechins act at many different targets. They inhibit the NFKB by green tea catechins. That's good. And they also have what is called epigallocatechin gallate, or EGCG, and that's particularly important, very positive. It can cause cancer death. Then you have isoflavones. And isoflavones and isoflavonoids are molecules found in many plants, particularly in the bean family. And plants use them as disease-fighting compounds and also as a stimulus for the symbiotic bacteria that help them use nitrogen to build proteins. So isoflavones from soybeans have many beneficial and protective effects in human cells as well, and which is one of the reasons that women who have high intake of the isoflavones have lower breast cancer, men lower prostate cancer, and that's true in Asian countries and has been for a long time. And soy isoflavones like genistein are powerful modulators of NFKB. It acts by both preventing NFKB's movement into the nucleus to activate inflammatory genes, but also by preventing earlier molecular events that would lead to its activation. And it promotes genistein from green tea from soy promotes cancer cell death by downregulation of NFKB. And then finally, you have the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, remember, you can get them both from fish, or, I prefer, from flaxseed and other natural ways, hemp seed, walnuts, avocados. And there's several types of cancer that are dealt with by the omega-3 fatty acids. First, the omega-3s turn off inflammation. I don't care if the inflammation is fibromyalgia, arthritis, whatever inflammation, it can turn it down. But also, it's been proven that the omega-3s are associated with a reduction in inflammation-mediated growth of pancreatic cancer, prostate, colon, and skin cancer cells by downregulating NFKB. So that's important. So yes, we know what causes cancer, and we know how to turn it off and help. All we have to do is actualize it. I'm Gary Noll. Now from our environmental segment, this is important, and I'll explain why. Some people say, yeah, but that's not going to be for 100, 200, 500 years. Who cares? It's happening now. We're seeing the greatest melt in the Arctic, in great glaciers, including the Himalayan glaciers. One of the largest lakes in Bolivia is gone, 100% gone. Tens of thousands of people relied upon it, no longer can have that. We're seeing Greenland melt faster than ever, and Antarctica with huge calving, meaning breaking off. So it's not that we're in a irreparable, unstoppable loop. We are. This is one of the tipping points that is tipped. Some of the tipping points we can slow down, some we may prevent, but at least six of the major tipping points, it's too late. Now, it doesn't mean that because it's too late, you can't do anything. There are several things you can do. First, you can look around and see what is the likelihood of a particular tipping point impacting me, where I'm living, my quality of life, my sustainability. Simple questions, realistic questions. And it's like once I was in California doing a show, and afterwards, someone said, I got the neatest place for you to see. So he took me up to this person's house. And I'd never seen a house like that before. There was like a little crevice in the hill, in Beverly Hills. And a guy built this three-story house going into the crevice. It was kind of not a deep house. And it gave you this very odd sensation when you went out looked, and you're just looking straight down this long fall. And I'm thinking, all it takes is one moderate tremor, and this house could go down the hill. Why would you put a house on the side of a hill? But they had all these houses built on the side of a hill, as if it would never happen. So as long as the worst in life never happens, you get away with making a bad choice. But right now, recently I won the International Miami International Film Festival and For Poverty, Inc., which is up, I believe, to around 60 wins this year. And where I can, I go to see it. In other cases, we have a list of people in the audience who says, sure, we'd like to go. And Myrtle Beach Film Festival, we won. They're going over to pick up award, and others, they've already done so in California. But anytime I can get around to it, when I do, because I like to mix and mingle with the people and find out what they're doing and learn from them. Well, there it is. It's at nighttime. I'm over in Miami. Alton Road is flooded, but there's no storm. Hasn't even been any rain. Why? That's the nightly surge from the ocean, the tides coming in. Remember years ago I said that I thought it was time to make my move. I lived in South Beach. I lived on the water and had a beautiful place. In fact, it was considered one of the most beautiful apartments in all of South Beach. And I designed it myself. I bought it before there was even a building there, when it was an empty lot, when it was all really a downtrodden area. And I love being there alone, walking on the beach in the morning, writing a lot of ideas, going on 10-mile runs. But starting about 6 years ago, I started seeing at nighttime the seaweed. Remember, the rise in the level of the tides at night. And then when it goes back out in the morning, it leaves the seaweed. And it was higher and higher and higher and higher until finally I saw it in the bottom of some buildings, swimming pools. And I thought, this is not going to be stoppable. Also, you see early in the morning, truckloads of sand that are brought in by barge, I believe from the Bahamas now, and then bulldozers smooth it out because the sea's taking back every night. It's taking back the sand. And nobody would listen. Oh, are you kidding? It's the greatest market. You know, this is it. I don't care about that. I care about, is it going to be sustainable in the future? You don't want to wait to a disaster. You want to get ahead of it, which I did. And now, and for the past several years, Alton Road, they've had to spend, I think it was $16 million on not solving the problem, just getting pumps to pump the water out of the sewer system into the bay. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all because the bay water goes right back around and into the ocean. The bay and the ocean are connected. So it's not resolving the issue at all. So quite simply, Miami is dying. The entire East South Coast Florida, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, in time, they will all no longer be inhabitable. Because, not because of one day you're going to look out and see a building sunk, that won't happen. What you're going to find is that all of those buildings built on the beach were all built on concrete, long poles, going down, stanchions going down, resting on sand. And with all that water coming in and going out, it's going to pull that sand out. And when it pulls the sand out, it will cause structural fractures until the building departments, health departments will say, cannot be here any longer. And then you have a big storm, a Category 3, 4, or 5, it'll wipe it out. And the storms are getting more frequent and they're getting worse. Now, drive down, I used to love, one of my favorite things was to drive down to Key West. I love to drive down, go through Key Largo, stop and go over and just hang out by the water for hours, then go down to Key West and walk down the beautiful streets where Hemingway used to have his home, and you had these big banyan trees. It's just for me, it's one of these very wonderful, distressing moments. And the people are nice. The small community. Now when you go through Key Largo, you got streets with 20 inches of water. No rain, mosquitoes beyond your imagination, and a stench that is unbelievable. It isn't going to go away. It's going to get worse. So all around America, all around the world, we have tens of millions of people who are not going to be prepared. Now, on the one hand, the very protective governmental agencies cannot afford to tell people the truth. Because if they did, people are going to move. In a reasonable period of time, they'll move. That means a tax base will decline. Property values will crash. And then what are you going to run your bureaucracies on? Air? So the government will be the last person to ever tell you the truth if telling you the truth jeopardizes its revenue flows. Quote from the study in Nature magazine. This is from Dr. DeCanto. This could spell disaster for many low-lying cities. For example, Boston could see more than 1.5 meters. Let me see, 1.5 meters is 5 feet of sea level rise. Yeah? And they're not even considering what will happen when Antarctic ice sheets start to retreat, which it's doing now. The trouble is they're all trying to be ultra, ultra conservative, giving you the most optimistic mathematical models. But nature doesn't play by someone's political, ideological, feel-good-about-life, don't-show-us-the-told-truth dream book. It tells you the truth by its 127,000 unique weather events in the last 12 months. Unique means the most rain, the worst heat, the worst snow, whatever it is. These are extreme. And it's only going to get worse. So my suggestion, take a careful look where you're living, look at all the scientific evidence, and decide where would be the best place for you to be that would be sustainable for your future. Also involving our environmental segment today, this is from Dar Jamel from Truthout. Not a fishtail, humans are ingesting plastic thanks to ocean pollution. Humans generate more than 300 million tons of plastic annually, an amount equal to the combined body weight of the entire global adult population, and nearly half of the plastic is only used one time before it's tossed away to eventually find its way to the oceans. So it should come as little surprise that it's a virtual certainty that every seabird on the planet will have plastic in its stomach in the near future. Recent estimates indicate that upwards of 8 million tons of plastic are added to the planet's oceans every year, the equivalent of dumping a truck full of plastic every 60 seconds. That is enough plastic to have led one scientist to estimate that people who consume average amounts, just average amounts of seaweed or seafood, are ingesting approximately 11,000 particles of plastic in your body from eating fish each year. 11,000 particles that are not going to exit your body. They're going to disrupt your hormones, lodge in your organs. The Earth's ocean will have more plastic than fish in the near future. So, what can we do about it? Let's hear from a short clip where Jeff Bridges shares his concern, and we should pick up on this.
Open your eyes. When did we become a plastic society? We got plastic bags, plastic water bottles, plastic straws, plastic cups, plastic wrap, plastic utensils, and plastic to-go containers. Plastic is a substance the Earth cannot digest. And every bit of plastic that has ever been created still exists. Every day in the United States, we throw out almost 88,000 tons of plastic. Now, what happens to plastic after you use it? Well, most of it goes into landfills. A portion gets into the water course and eventually ends up in the oceans. Recycling is not a sustainable solution. It's actually called downcycling because plastic never goes away. Consumption of disposable plastics has spiraled out of control. What is the number one thing plastic is made out of? Well, every year we use 17 million barrels of oil to make plastic water bottles. This is enough to fuel 1 million cars every year. Plastic pieces on the ocean surface now outnumber sea life 6 to 1. Plastic makes up almost 90% of all trash floating on the ocean surface, 46,000 pieces of plastic per square mile. What effect does plastic have on human health? Plastic chemicals like BPA are absorbed by the body. Studies show that they alter hormones and disrupt the endocrine system. By refusing disposable plastic, you can improve the health of the ocean and the environment around us, including human health and animal health. Since 2009, Plastic Pollution Coalition has been building a global alliance to combat single-use disposable plastic. Our membership includes individuals, organizations, NGOs, businesses, campuses, and policymakers. We share resources, tools, and messaging with our coalition to develop a broad-based strategy to tackle the issue head-on. We're working with universities, businesses, festivals, musicians, and more to create replicable and sustainable approaches to eliminating single-use disposable plastic. Plastic pollution is a global problem that humans alone have caused. We can do something about it. Please join our coalition. For more information, visit www.plasticpollutioncoalition.org. Remember, bring reusable items with you, like a water bottle, a cup, bag, utensils. Refuse plastic when it's offered. And remember to say, no straw, please. Only purchase items in sustainable packaging, like glass and wax paper.
Let's be more conscious, just saying no to the plastic, unless it is a biodegradable plastic. There are stores that have biodegradable plastic, and we should ask for biodegradable plastic, but otherwise paper, or better still, take your own burlap and or bag with you, shoulder bag, and just take your stuff home that way if you can. Now to a segment that I feel is very important. It's who do we believe when it comes to informing us of important issues? Well, normally we believe the people in the media and the people we're used to listening to. But how do we know that they're being consistently honest or objective? How do we know that they have not been influenced by, let's say, an advertiser? Let me give an example. I sent over to MSNBC, to each one of the hosts there, including Keith Olbermann, different award-winning documentaries on Gulf War syndrome, on the drugging of our children, on our deadly nuclear legacy, the war on health, vaccine nation. In other words, I sent it all told over a period of about 5 years. I sent about 10 documentaries. Not a word in response. Now, either A, they were too busy to look at it, which is understandable and legitimate, or B, they looked at it, didn't believe it, in which case they have allowed their biases or their beliefs to limit them. But what if it was something else? What if you were working, for example, at a network and someone had a good story, maybe a story about the dangers of the drugs that our senior citizens get daily, routinely, the fact that 25% of all American women between the ages of 25 and 45 are on some type of antipsychotic or antidepressant medication that do not work, that have serious side effects. And you look at the story, it's well done, it's been vetted, it's accurate, and then you think about playing the story, and then you realize, gee whiz, we have at least 7 advertisers during that time slot, all pharmaceutical companies, and they could yank those ads. What if they not only yanked those ads, but they didn't advertise anymore on your network? You're dealing in hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenues. Is it worth it? To an Edward R. Murrow, yeah, it'd be worth it. But not to today. Not today, where business and the media are intertwined. So sometimes there's self-censorship. But recently, when a film, Vaxxed, was taken out of the Tribeca Film Festival by Robert De Niro, after he had defended it, because he has his own 16-year-old son who has autism, and he believed that the public should be allowed to be exposed to a countervailing point of view, and then he changed his mind. Now, we don't know why he did that, but something has to have pressured him. Now, here's the idea. What happens when the people who are giving us the story are all talking from the same page, from big business, from corporate interests, from foundations and governmental agencies? That film was attacked by every major media in the United States using almost the same identical language, all within 24 hours. That's simply not possible. That means that all the media had to have someone on the other side, the pro-vaccine people, saying, you know, here's what's wrong with the film, though they hadn't seen it, and here's what's wrong with the people in the film. And the media didn't do their homework. I want to give you a clip here of a respected German journalist. His name is Udo Olafoktodi, who is telling us the truth about how insidious and pervasive the intelligence agencies are in getting their stories into the hands of respected journalists, and that then becomes the news story. Well, think about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Think about the need to bomb Libya because it represented a threat. It didn't. It was the most prosperous state, the country in Africa, 54 countries. It was number one in education and standard of living and money in the bank and lack of debt. But the media is what drove us to accept that that war by NATO was acceptable. He tells us the truth. Rare do you have a journalist tell you the truth. Let's listen in now.
I've been a journalist for about 25 years, and I was educated to lie, to betray, and not to tell the truth to the public. But seeing right now, within the last months, how far how the German and American media tries to bring war to the people in Europe, to bring war to Russia. This is a point of no return, and I'm going to stand up and say it is not right what I have done in the past to manipulate people, to make propaganda against Russia, and it is not right what my colleagues do and have done in the past, because they are bribed to betray the people, not only in Germany, all over Europe. The reason writing this book was that I am very fearful of a new war in Europe, and I don't like to have this situation again, because war is never coming from itself. There is always people behind it to push for war. And this is not only politicians, this is journalists too. And I just have written in the book how we have betrayed in the past our readers just to push for war, and because I don't want this anymore. I'm fed up with this propaganda. We live in a banana republic and not in a democratic country where we have press freedom, where we have human rights. If you see the German media, especially my colleagues who day by day write against the Russians, who are in transatlantic organizations and who are supported by the United States to do so, well, people like me, I became honorary citizen of the state of Oklahoma in the United States. Just why? Just because I write pro-American. I wrote pro-American. I was supported by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the CIA. Why? Because I should be pro-American. I'm fed up with it. I don't want to do it anymore. And so I've just written a book not to earn money. No, it will cause a lot of trouble for me, just to give the people in this country, in Germany, in Europe, and all over the world, just to give them a glimpse of a view what goes up behind the closed doors. Yes, there is many examples for that. If we go just back to history, if you go into the year 1988, if you go to your archives, you will find in March 1988 that there was in Iraq, the Kurdish people have been gassed with poisoned gas. That is known all over the world. But in July 1988, they sent me to a town called Zubaydat, that is on the Iraqi-Iranian border. There was war. It was war between the Iranians and the Iraqis, and I was sent there to photograph how the Iranians have been gassed with poisoned gas, with German poisoned gas. You call it Lost and Zarin, mustard gas, made by Germany. They have been gassed, and I was there to make photographs how these people have been killed by poison gas from Germany. When I came back to Germany, there was just one small photo in a newspaper, in the Frankfurter Allgemeine, and there was one small article, not writing how impressive, brutally, how inhuman, how terrible it was to kill decades after the end of the Second World War people with German poisoned gas. So this was a situation I feel misused for having been there, and just to give a documentary what has been done, but not being allowed to cry out to the world what we have done behind closed doors. Up to today, it's not well known in the public that was German public gas. There have been hundreds or thousands of people gassed in this city of Zubaydat. Now, you ask, what have I done for intelligence agencies? So, please see, most of the journalists you see in foreign countries, they claim to be journalists, and they might be journalists, European or American journalists, but many of them, like me in the past, are so-called non-official cover. That's what the Americans call that. I have been a non-official cover. Non-official cover means what? It means you too work for an intelligence agency. You help them if they want you to help them, but they will never. When you are locked when they find out that you're not only a journalist but a spy too, they will never say, oh, this was one of our guys. They will not know you. That means non-official cover. So I have helped them in several situations, and I feel ashamed for that too now. Like I feel ashamed that I have worked for a very recommended newspaper like the Frankfurter Allgemeine because I was bribed by billionaires, I was bribed by the Americans not to report exactly the truth, but I just imagined in my car while I was driving to this interview, I just tried to work out in my brain what would have happened if I would have written a pro-Russian article in the Frankfurter Allgemeine. Well, I don't know what would have happened, but we were all educated to write pro-European, pro-American, but please, not pro-Russian. So I'm very sorry for that, but this is not what I understand for democracy and for press freedom. I'm very sorry for that. Well, Yes, I understand your question very well. Germany is still a kind of a colony of the United States. You see that in many points, like the majority of the Germans don't want to have nukes in our country, but we still have American nukes. So we are still a kind of a colony of the Americans. And being a colony, it is very easy to approach young journalists through what is very important here is transatlantic organizations. All journalists from really respected and recommended big German newspapers, magazines, radio stations, TV stations, they are all members or guests of those big transatlantic organizations. And there, in these transatlantic organizations, you are approached to be pro-American. And there is nobody coming to you and say, well, we are the Central Intelligence Agency. Would you like to work for us? No, this is not the case how it happens. What they do, these transatlantic organizations, is they invite you. They invite you for seeing the United States. They pay for that. They pay all your expenses and everything. So you are bribed. You get more and more corrupt. Because they make you good contacts. You won't know that those good contacts are, let's say, non-official covers or officially people working for Central Intelligence Agency or other American agencies. So you make friends. You think they are friends and you cooperate with them. They ask you, well, could you do me this favor? Could you do me that favor? And so your brain more and more is brainwashed through these guys. And your question was, is this only the case with German journalists? No, I think it is especially the case with British journalists because they have a much closer relationship. It is especially the case with Israelis, of course, with French journalists for a part, not that big as with German or with British journalists. It is the case for Australian journalists, for journalists from New Zealand, from Taiwan, from, well, there is many countries in the Arab world, like Jordan, for example, like Oman, the Sultanate of Oman. There is many countries where this happens, where you find people to claim they are respected journalists, but if you look behind them, you'll find they are puppets on a string of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I'll give you one example. Sometimes the intelligence agencies, they come to your office and want you to write an article. I give you an example not from strange other journalists, from me myself. I've just forgotten the year. I just remember that the German Foreign Intelligence, Bundesnachrichtendienst, it is just a sister organization of the Central Intelligence Agency. It was founded by the American Intelligence Agency. So one day, the BND, this German Foreign Intelligence Agency, came to my office at the Frankfurter Allgemeine in Frankfurt. And they wanted me to write an article about Libya and about Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. I had absolutely no secret informations regarding Colonel Muammar Gaddafi and Libya. But they gave me all these secret informations And they just wanted me to write, to sign the article with my name. I did that, but it was an article that was published in the Frankfurt Allgemeine that originally came from the Bundesnachrichtendienst, from the German Foreign Intelligence Agency. So do you really think that this is journalism? Intelligence agencies writing articles? Oh yes, that article, I have reprinted it partly in my book. That article was how Libya and Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, how he secretly tried to build a poison gas factory, I think in Rabta was the name, yeah. And I got all those informations. It was a story that was printed worldwide 2 days later. But I had no information on that. It was the intelligence agency that wanted me to write this article. So, but this is not the way journalism should work, that intelligence agencies, that they decide what is printed and what not. If I say no, I give you an example from a very good example if you say no. Well, we have a rescue unit in Germany with helicopters for traffic accidents. It's called, they call themselves the Yellow Angels. There was one guy who didn't want to cooperate. He was a pilot of the helicopter service of the Yellow Angels in Germany. This guy said no to the Foreign Intelligence Service, Bundesnachrichtendienst, when they approached him and wanted him as a non-official cover to work for the German Foreign Intelligence Agency, under, just to pretend to be somebody from the Yellow Angels. So what happened was that he lost his job. And the court in Germany, the judge decided that they were right because such a guy could not be trusted. He was kicked off his job because he didn't cooperate with the Foreign Intelligence Service. So I knew what happened if I would not cooperate with intelligence services.
Okay, well, that just gives you an idea of how serious it is. But that's one journalist coming forward. Rare that you're going to find others. Now let's listen to a person who has something to say about our educational system, the truth about American education. And this guy has the courage to tell the truth about the American educational system and the dumbing down of the American population. What do you think?
Disagree with my esteemed colleague here. Okay. Let me say that science is the engine of prosperity. From steam power to electricity to the laser to the transistor to the computer.
That's not true.
We're
That's
talking
technology.
About. Hey,
mate.
Hey, can I have my.
Sure.
You had your say. Let me have my say.
Yes.
However, the information revolution has a weakness, and the weakness is precisely the educational system. The United States has the worst educational system known to science. Our graduates compete regularly at the level of third world countries. So how come the scientific establishment of the United States doesn't collapse? If we're producing a generation of dummies, if the stupid index of America keeps rising every year, just watch network television and reality shows, right? How come the scientific establishment of the United States doesn't collapse? Let me tell you something. Some of you may not know this. America has a secret weapon. That secret weapon is the H-1B. Without the H-1B, the scientific establishment of this country would collapse. Forget about Google. Forget about Silicon Valley. There would be no Silicon Valley without the H-1B. And you know what the H-1B is? It's the genius visa, okay? You realize that in the United States, 50% of all PhD candidates are foreign-born. At my system, one of the biggest in the United States, 100% of the PhD candidates are foreign-born. The United States is a magnet sucking up all the brains of the world, but now the brains are going back.
Right.
They're going back to China. They're going back to India. And people are saying, oh my God, there's a Silicon Valley in India now. Oh my God, there's a Silicon Valley in China. Duh. Where did it come from? It came from the United States. So don't tell me that science isn't the engine of prosperity. You remove the H-1B visa and you collapse the economy. In Wall Street Journal, editorialized against a congressman who wanted to ban the H-1B, saying they'll take jobs away from the American people. The Wall Street Journal said, look, there are no Americans who can take these jobs. These are at the highest level of high technology. They don't take away jobs for Americans. They create entire industries. And so that's why we have an Achilles heel, and that's the educational system. And again, sociology majors are not necessarily going to be the ones determining the future of Silicon Valley. But physicists, engineers, we need more of them, not less.
The irony is...
That was Professor Michio Kaku, but I would hold a separate point of view. He is correct in saying that all of these genius people coming in, but what he's not telling us is that on the other side of that, there are enormous amounts of people coming in, not in the sciences, but in other fields, with one-third to one-half the pay that a long time in American had built up seniority. There, the American is told you have the next 3 months to 6 months to teach this new person everything about your job, then you're gone. And we're not talking about a few or a few thousand or a few hundred thousand. We're talking about several millions of people who are not scientists, but thought that they would have a secure future because of the dedication and hard work they gave to a corporation that now is looking at bringing in someone from China or India who's very bright and very well educated, who's going to take their job. That's the other side of that story. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.